thought I would continue. I've been speaking sequentially from First Canto, Chapter 1, towards the beginning. And there's three verses, 14 through 16, they fit together. And I'll give a little backdrop and then we'll go. These early verses, starting with Canto 1, Chapter 1, text number 9 and 10 and 11, there and 13, they're presenting some of the basic questions that make up the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is very fundamental stuff. The questions that the sages ask Sutta were, starting with number 1, what's the all-around good for all living beings in all circumstances? That's a good question. Then the next one was, what's the essence of the entire scripture? Succinctly stated, please. Good question. Excellent question. Could you describe the reason why Krishna appeared in the world that he created? Nice question. Can you describe the teachings of the great sages and acharyas since the beginning of time? You know them. Can you teach them to us? Then these three verses, 14, 15, and 16, they're like a bridge that go into the next set of what, you know, the question number 5 and question number 6. It actually starts with a repeat of those last two questions. And then 5 and 6. So in these verses, they're not just fillers. They're also essences. So, and I'll share some little appreciation. Rupa Goswami, when he wrote Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Prabhupada translated that as Nectar of Devotion. Nectar of Devotion is a summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is a summary study of all the revealed scriptures. And Rupa Goswami gathered the essences from all those revealed scriptures. So what Rupa Goswami taught in Nectar of Devotion was teachings that he heard from Lord Chaitanya and are found within the scripture, and he just simplified it. So here's a quiz question. Nectar of Devotion quiz question. It's a real easy one. There are 64 items of devotional service. Of those 64, 5 are said to be most important, most potent. So potent that if you can do even one of them without offense, then very quickly love of God will awaken within your heart. So what are those? Don't blurt it out. Raise your hand. One at a time. One at a time. One.
Residing in a sacred place like Mathura, Vrindavan.
Residing in a sacred place like Potomac, Maryland, right. Worshipping the deity form of the Lord.
Serving Bhagavatam.
Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam.
Chanting the holy name.
Chanting the holy name. One more.
Association.
Yes, serving and associating with the devotees of the Lord. That's 5. You got a 6th one? Okay. Well, in these verses 14, 15, and 16, we're going to find 3 of those 5 right in these verses. Wow. Because the sages, they've already appreciated Sutta Goswami's position. His position is, he's a sattvata. He's one who has taken full shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he is under the Lord's protection because of that. Satvata Patihi. Bhagavan Satvata Patihi. And he's heard from Shukadev Goswami, but he didn't just hear from Shukadev Goswami. He's understood everything. He's not only heard and understood, he's assimilated everything. And they're out there milking the cow. They want to receive from Sutta, who's heard from Shukadev Goswami, this wonderful teaching that he's assimilated. So, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then, here, I'll just read the translations for starter. Text 14. Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be immediately, by even unconsciously, can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified. So chanting the holy name. O Sutta, those great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them, whereas the water of the Ganges can sanctify only after prolonged use. So, associating with devotees. Who is there desiring deliverance from the vices of the age of quarrel will not be willing to hear the virtuous glories of the Lord? So, again, hearing, because they've asked about, can you describe those forms of the Lord as they appear within this world? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, many of our acharyas have commented on these verses. He says this is simply a prelude to the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, embedded way in the beginning of the first canto of Bhagavatam, because the sixth canto is the description of Ajamila, who exactly did this. It's the example given by Shukadev Goswami to answer Maharaj Pariksit's question, what can be done to counteract the sins, the reactions of sinful persons? And the answer is, best of all things is the chanting of the holy name. And Jiva Goswami comments that the just as Krishna, we're going to find out in chapter 3, just as Krishna is the source of all avatars, therefore also all the names of the Lord are simply names of Krishna. And then to support what he says, he quotes the Vishnu Purana. And there's a verse in Vishnu Purana that says exactly that. The name Krishna is the source of all other names of God. Did you know that? Vishnu Purana speaks like that, explicitly. And therefore, whatever names, Madhava, Govinda, Hari, Damodar, etc., names of the Lord, they're but names of Krishna. Because Krishna is the source. They're but his expansions. So the name of the expansion indicates the name of the source of that expansion. So Jiva Goswami then goes back and says, this chanting means the chanting of Krishna's name. And therefore the Yuga Dharma is this chanting of Krishna's name, supported by the scriptural authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then... Prabhupada enriches this message very nicely this way. Everything is related to Krishna, and everything has its identity in Him. It is stated herein that the name of Krishna is feared even by fear personified, Svayam Bhayam. So, fear, that which is feared by everyone, feared personified, fears the purifying effect of Krishna. What can stand in the presence of Krishna's, what impurity, what fearful thing can stand in the face of Krishna? Just like the Yamadutas. You know who the Yamadutas are?
Yeah.
Tell me, who are they? Yamaraja's servants, right. Yamadutas. And who are the Vishnudutas? Vishnu's servants. Yeah. So the Yamadutas, they're the agents of the Lord of Death, and who can defy death? Who has ever? They were never stopped before. Who can stop death? So the agents of death are there to take the sinful soul and subtle body with their subtle robes and their subtle bodies, take the subtle body of Ajamila before Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, and the Vishnudutas stop them. Stop! Who are you? Oh, beautiful ones with beautiful forearm forms and beautiful features and beautiful faces. Who are you? No one has ever stopped us before. We'll tell you who you are, but first you tell us you're the agents of Yamaraj. What are the principles of Dharma? He's the upholder of Dharma, and you're his agents. You must know what is his mission. You must know what is Dharma and Adharma. We're going to give you an exam right now. Surprise quiz. Make sure you know what is Dharma and Adharma. Because of the calling of Narayana, calling of the holy name of the Lord. It's so powerful it can stop death and the agents of death. And fear personified, our acharyas describe even time. Because Krishna says, time I am, destroyer of all things. Even that which is the destroyer of all things can't destroy the holy name. And that which is of the same quality as the holy name, one who takes shelter of the holy name, cannot be destroyed. The body can be destroyed because it's temporary. But the soul and the soul's position in relation to the Supreme cannot be checked for one who calls the holy name. Even unconsciously. It's not like, you know, unconsciously, like somebody bonks you on the head and you're unconscious and you're, Krishna! Not like that. Meaning unintentionally. Unintentionally. Not consciously calling Krishna like Ajamila was not consciously calling Narayan. He called for his son. So name your children Narayan or Krishna or Madhava or Govinda or Hari or Nrisingadev and something. So that when you call their name, even unconsciously, not intending to call the Lord by that name, even unconsciously, so powerful. Right here in the first chapter, early part of the first chapter of Canto 1, Srimad Bhagavatam. Then the next verse is making a comparison about the devotees. The devotees are very special. The sattvata patihis, those who are from the previous verse. Sat, we discussed this morning. Sat means that which is eternal or existing, eternally existing. Sat. But Bhagavan Satvatapatihi means the personality of Godhead, the Supreme Lord, Sat. And Satvatam is those who have taken shelter of Him, the Supreme Lord. And He becomes the protector of those souls. So those souls that are in His shelter and protected by Him, they're of this same Sat and Chit and Ananda nature. They are so special in this world. They're special like the Lord is special. They're as special as the Lord is special. As far as the Lord is concerned, they're more special. Better than me, the Lord speaks, is my devotee. One who takes shelter of my devotee, one who takes shelter of my devotee, is more dear to me than one who tries to take shelter of me. One who tries to take shelter of me without regarding my devotee, he's not my devotee. And so the verse is saying that even more sacred than the Ganges. So our acharyas describe that of all the sacred purifying places and pilgrimage sites, the Ganges has traditionally been considered the most sacred. But here the Bhagavatam is declaring, Sutta is declaring, the devotee is more sacred. By bathing, or elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, by bathing in the Ganges many, many times, one can become freed from their material contamination. But even once, even a moment's association with a devotee is so powerful, it can accomplish the same thing. Then another verse is quoted by Jiva Goswami saying that if you just see the Ganges, one can become purified. But a devotee, if you just remember the devotee, you can become purified. Therefore, the devotee is more powerful. And the verse is upholding that point of Jiva Goswami. The Yatpada Samashraya Sutta Munaya Pashamashana. So he breaks down the meaning of this. Prashanashama. Pra means special, as in prakashita. So the devotee is very special. Why is it that they're very special? Sama. It refers to the fact that the Lord is equal, and if one can bring one's intelligence upon the Lord by hearing about Him, because this is important, when we're hearing the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam, not by speculation, but by receptive, the intelligence should be active. When we're hearing the message of the Bhagavatam in the language of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we should be considering from different angles, what is that message? What is this gift of transcendence that's being handed to me, gifted to me? What is it? What is its nature? What is its value? What is its essence? And from different angles, consider, this is the intelligence should be active in this way. And when the intelligence is active in that way, the intelligence becomes fixed on the Supreme Lord. Bhagavad Nishta Buddhita. And then Jiva Goswami says, Krishna confirms the same when he's speaking with Uddhava in Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. And that is, the mind can become fixed when you absorb your intelligence in Krishna. There's a state of mental equilibrium. Krishna's words, just as Krishna is speaking to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, he's speaking to Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita, that we were discussing just today, like a ship. And the ship is out on the sea. So if you bring the ship by the shore and a big storm comes, the ship is going to get blown all over the place. But if the ship is safely moored, then in the morning when the storm is over, the ship is still there in place. Even the storm came and the storm went. No change because of the safe mooring. Same. The Acharyas are describing what Sutta is saying here. If, through the association of devotees who are the Satvata Patihis, if you have their association and you hear, you receive the message that they're offering, and consider carefully what is this message with one's buddhi, with one's God-given spiritual intelligence, then the intelligence becomes fixed and the mind becomes equipoised or perfectly balanced. So that's this word, dhira, where the mind, even in a disturbing circumstances, remains undisturbed. How do you do that? How do you remain, by definition, a disturbing circumstance is disturbing. It's like water. You know, here comes a wind. What happens when wind hits the water? You get waves. So it's, the wind comes and the water remains without waves. What's that? That doesn't happen. So water moves with the wind, but the mind cannot move with disturbing circumstances. If the intelligence, this is what is being said here, and our acharyas are unpacking the message. If in the association with saintly persons, the Sutta Goswamis and the representatives of Sutta Goswami, just as Sutta Goswami is a representative of Shukadeva, and Shukadeva is a representative of Vyas. And Vyas is a representative of Narada, and Narada is a representative of Brahma, and Brahma is a representative of Vishnu. And in that method of disciplic succession, if one can hear that message, as each one of them also heard that message, even in disturbing circumstances, one can remain undisturbed. Like Maharaj Parikshit, he heard that, and his mind became completely fixed. In the video series of Sagar, I haven't seen this, but I've had people tell me, why was Maharaj Parikshit sitting up on a big platform? Has anyone seen that in Sagar series? The answer is, he wasn't sitting on a big platform. You know, because what was the curse was he would die from the bite of a snake bird. So, big platform so the snake bird can't get him. But it was a snake bird. It wasn't just a snake that crawls on the ground and can't, you know, couldn't climb up a big pole. It was a snake with wings. He wasn't up on a big platform. He wasn't hiding from the snake bird. He was sitting on the ground. He was sitting at the feet of Shukadeva Swami. That's what he was doing. And at the end of, after hearing everything that Shukadeva Goswami says, he declares, my dear Shukadeva Goswami, I'm ready. Let that mystical thing, the Takshaka, come and finish me. I'm ready. I want to go back to Godhead. Let me give up this body in fixed consciousness upon the personality of Godhead. Just fine with me. No fear. You know, they have these little decals, no fear. Right. Right. But in Maharaj Parikshit's case, no fear. No fear because there's this, when there is full shelter in Sat, then the features of Asat, they come and they go and they're not disturbing. Conversely, if one is not fixed in Sat, here comes a feature of duality. Maybe you can remain undisturbed, then amplify it a little bit, and amplify it a little bit, and amplify it. And everyone has their you know, red button. Their breaking point where it's, you know, it's no longer neutral. Even a stoic, you know, it comes a point where even a tapasvi, it's too much. Or a tyagi, it's too attractive or something. Unless the mind and intelligence are fixed, then it's a temporary position. Whatever attainment one reaches, Prabhupada gave this very simple example. Send a rocket ship, blast off into outer space, zoom around in outer space for some time. If that rocket ship doesn't take shelter somewhere, eventually it has to come back. If it takes shelter somewhere in an atmosphere where it can remain, or the personalities can remain, then they can stay there. But if there's no shelter, they have to come back. Similarly, one can go up, 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 up. But if there isn't shelter, it's down, 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 down. You have to come back again. Have to come back again. So shelter is meant for both the intelligence, specifically mentioned here, Bhagavat Nishta Buddhita, where the intelligence becomes fixed. And when the intelligence becomes fixed, by absorbing the intelligence in me, Krishna saying, or absorbing the intelligence in Krishna, it constitutes mental equilibrium. It just follows. Boom, boom. Mental equilibrium. So even some wind may come, some little ripples may be there, but it's not, it doesn't disturb. The mind doesn't get carried away. One remains dhira. And that dhira condition is described nicely in the Bhagavad Gita, where one is neutral towards features of duality. Honor and dishonor. Might be okay to be neutral to honor, but neutral to dishonor? You know, mind doesn't like those things. It rebels. But one has to be fixed in shelter. And how does that fixed shelter come about? The verse is saying specifically, O Sutta, the great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, spoken of in the previous verse, Satvatam Patihi, can at once sanctify those who come in contact with them. So one should eagerly seek out that association. So where there's how many here have been to the Radha Damodar temple? Okay. Those of you who have been, picture in your mind as you walk in through that entry archway, and there's a little like a kirtan floor in front, and then the raised altar, and then the altar. So then there's the Parikrama Marg. It goes around the samadhis in the back, and then back behind the deities. So in 1972 or something like that, when I first went, 73, there was what was behind the altar was very different. What was behind the altar was a tall, like a covering, like a slab of something, cement or something, and you kind of walked under this shaded area. And it was Guru Das who took a group of us to Radha Damodar Temple and places around Vrindavan, and he described that Prabhupada said that the Radha Damodar Temple, which was given to Jiva Goswami by Rupa Goswami was geographically central from where Radha Govinda Temple, Radha Madan Mohan Temple, Radha Raman Temple, you know, it was a geographic center. And so the Goswamis would come together every day and sit and discuss Krishna Katha in that nice shaded place. So the shaded place is now gone. They needed space or something, I don't know. But I distinctly remember, because we sat and had kirtan. It was, you know, hot, like it sometimes gets in Vrindavan. It was blistering hot. But we were in this nice, cool area. So it's nice to be in a cool area when it's hot. But it was where the Goswamis, the devotional mood was, this is where the Goswamis sat. And just over around the other side of the Samadhi and Bhajan Kutir of Rupa Goswami. But from the corner you could see the Samadhi, you're just behind the deities. There's the other Samadhis on the other side. It's very tranquil and spiritually surcharged, and they would come in for hours. Prabhupada described this, for hours every day. They would discuss topics of Srimad Bhagavatam and pastimes of Krishna. Sometimes Rupa and Sanatan would stay some distant places in Terkadamba and Pavan Sarovar and other places. But when they were together in Vrindavan, they would gather at the Radha Damodar temple and have that nice kirtan and katha. Because that's what devotees like to do. Katayan chaschamam nityam tushanticha ramanticha. Hearing and discussing topics of Krishna. And the Bhagavatam is specifically meant to be discussed. It's meant to be read, but even more, it's meant to be heard and chanted. It's topics that when heard and chanted and churned, then the sweetness comes out. The transcendental enjoyment that's embedded within the messages comes out. And it's not like chewing gum or something after, you know, the sugar's gone after a while. It gets more juicy, more sweet, more nectarine. So you churn it again and churn it again and churn it again. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's described that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself would go every day after seeing the deity of Lord Jagannath. He received some Mahaprasad from the pujaris. Then he would take that Mahaprasad and go visit Haridas Thakur and give Haridas Thakur prasad straight from the altar of Lord Jagannath, because Haridas Thakur was so humble he wouldn't even go inside. So Jagannath came in the form of prasad outside, and he would have some conversation with Haridas Thakur. And after having conversation with Haridas Thakur, he would go to the Radha Gopinath temple and take darshan of Radha Gopinath. And then he would sit and hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit for several hours every day. And he would hear the same pastimes again and again. It specifically says he would hear, you know, think of some of the standard pastimes of the Bhagavatam. He would hear about Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj. And he would hear the entire pastime. 100 times he would hear the pastime, and then he would say, "Say it again, say it again." He didn't say, "Oh, I've heard that one before. Is there a new one?" "Say it again." And as he would also taste shlokas, that from those shlokas there was very deep and profound spiritual meaning, he would chant it again and again. And he would tell Sarup Damodar, "Recite it again and again." That's when there's ruchi, there's taste. And taste comes when the purities, impurities have been removed by the regulative practice of, again and again, by standard sadhana, bhakti, in the association of the sattvatam patihis, so that the intelligence can become fixed, the mind can be fixed, and duality isn't something that disturbs you. It comes and it goes. It goes this way, it goes that way, and sometimes it's in between. And that's perfectly okay, because when one's fixed in sat, then the true happiness is so great that time can pass and, you know, existence can come and go, material existence can come and go. And therefore the concluding verse, who is there desiring deliverance from the vices of the age of quarrel, who will not be willing to hear the virtuous glories of the Lord? In a few verses previously, only 4 or 5 verses previously, the symptoms of the age of Kali, giving a premonition of a whole other canto, canto 12, have been described. Prayinau payushakshabhya kalavis asman yugejana mandaksa mandamatayo mandabhagya yupadrita. So it's very bad circumstance in this age of Kali. So now they're saying, who in this age of Kali, because the age of Kali has begun, when the sages are having this conversation, Kali Yuga has already begun. Maharishi Parikshit has already received the age of Kali. It's his age. He's doing his thing, and things are deteriorating, and they know it. They see it, but they also, scripturally, they know it. Just listening to Prabhupada describing how learned people know things. In the discussion between the Vishnu Dutas and the Yama Dutas, the agents of Yamaraj and the agents of Lord Vishnu, the Yama Dutas have been asked, please describe what is dharma and adharma. And Prabhupada was dissecting, like analyzing very critically, what the Yamadutas were saying. And the Yamadutas were saying that from the past one can understand the future by understanding how a person acts consistently, regularly. When the future circumstances of time comes, one can understand how they're lacked. The thief will be a thief. The honest person will be honest, and so on. You know, the character will prevail because of the modes of nature. And then, based upon the contact with the modes of nature, not only one will be impelled to act in a certain way, one will be held responsible for that action and having acted in a certain way. And this is the Yamadutas. They're not like, you know, very refined fellows. But they've heard from Yamaraj, so they understand the principle of how to discern such things. So the learned persons, the sages that had assembled, they were extremely concerned about this age of Kali and how people in this age of Kali would be in so much difficulty. They weren't just concerned for themselves, because they were transcendentalists. They were concerned for persons that were not yet fully transcendentalists and how much they would have to suffer. This is the nature of a saintly person. They're concerned about the welfare of others. Their life is of service to the welfare of others. So they wanted to do something. So this is not what they're saying. From Sutta, you have the medicine. You have the means. You're of that caliber of a saintly person that by your mere presence, just by seeing you, just by remembering you, and the messages that you deliver, all the vices of the age of Kali can be eradicated. And Prabhupada would speak like that, and we can see it even in our present day. Prabhupada would sit before audiences and say, you know very well the kinds of activities that you are engaged in. And just from chanting Hare Krishna and hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita and taking Krishna Prasad, those activities are not part of your life anymore. You're not interested. If someone says, would you like to do this or that? The answer is, I'm not interested. And it's factual, not just because, he would say, not just because Swamiji said no. Of course Swamiji said no, but even before his saying no, it's just that the interest fades. As one becomes attracted to Sat, the impermanent the sense of reality, here, an example given in the Bhagavatam is when on the surface of water, when the water is shimmering due to the movements of the wind, and the water is shimmering and the moon is reflecting on the shimmering surface of the water, it appears that the moon is moving. But the moon is not moving. It's just the surface of the water is shimmering and it's reflecting the light of the moon. Similarly, when the mind is disturbed, one can't stay fixed on anything. You start a path and, you know, in 1 minute, in the next minute, the path has changed. And the path has changed and life is like that in the material existence. No fixed position in any sphere. But on the path of, in the association of the sattvatas, that's completely changed. The mind can become steadied and fixed. It's a very, very simple and very natural and very nice process. So the sages are inviting Sutta, please deliver this wonderful milk, this transcendental, thick as honey, wonderful beverage, the message of Krishna. Describe the topics of Krishna for us, please. So, next few verses are the rest of the questions of the sages to Sutta Goswami, coming attractions. Stay tuned. Okay, any comments or discussion on this? Yes?
Maharaj, can you describe how mind can go astray, like after chanting, what we do during the rest of the day?
What do you do with the mind the rest of the day when you finish your chanting? Would you like to answer your own question? What's the function of the mind? It's thinking, feeling, and willing. So, if chanting is done nicely, the awakened condition of the soul is there, desiring some service, and so we have to use our minds in how to serve Krishna practically. So we give our minds some service like that. How to serve Krishna nicely. And we can also hear from the scriptures that as we're doing our service, we can be contemplating that message and how it applies, or the circumstance itself, how the teachings that we've heard apply to this circumstance. And in a mature stage, when the mind becomes attached, like we were discussing this morning, like, you know, in the romance, young boy, young girl romance, and she thinks of him and he thinks of her. Romeo and Juliet, they can't stop thinking of each other. So that's what the mind does. It thinks of the object of one's attachment. In the mature stage, that's what the mind does. In our present stage, we're in a practicing stage, so you contemplate what are the instructions of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, how to apply those instructions that I've heard from the spiritual master, those that are guiding me in my spiritual life, and then the mind goes there. And you give full engagement to the mind, and then the mind doesn't go to places it shouldn't go. And if some impure thought comes into the mind from past bad association, it's just discarded and go forward with the engagement in Krishna thought. Prabhupada's phrase is, our life should be planned in such a way that 24 hours we're thinking of Krishna. Manmana. By the expression of devotional service. And our social, economic, you know, family, so many, civic, so many things, they're also to be seen as services to Krishna. One of our civic services is going Harinam. Hari Bol. Meet the police and say, Hari Bol. Gotta have a permit. Hari Bol. We had that in Chicago. We had a Harinam on Festival of the Holy Name on, like, just before the 4th of July weekend, to have this big Taste of Chicago thing. So it was, I don't know what the number was, 60, 70 upwards from that, devotees. It was very nice, right now. Okay. And it was good for, like, it was fantastic for 2 hours. And then one of the police ladies thought that she was Putana. And she came out roaring. Anyway, yeah. Anyway, it was an interesting experience.
How did you diffuse?
We just kept moving. We just kept moving. She came out screaming at the top of her lungs, "Keep moving." And I said, "We're moving." "Keep moving." We kept moving. It has another ending to it, but another time. You know, she was one of those persons described in Bhagavad Gita that can't stand the holy name. Can't stand it. She couldn't stand it. Screamed. Like Shishupal. It's Shishupal's sister or something. Anyone else? Any comments or questions? Okay. You're all happy. Yes?
Maharaj, you were saying so wonderfully about how even when one unconsciously chants the holy name of the Lord, it's so powerful that it acts. I was just thinking, like you were saying about, like, how Ajamla, he called the son Narayan, and how Vishnudutas came. Even for unconsciously calling out, also the mercy is required.
Right? Yeah, there's mercy. When Ajamila escaped from death, he was feeling, "I got some mercy." It was definitely an act of, so very mercifully, then that's in Shikshastakam. The Supreme Lord very mercifully invests each and all of his transcendental potencies in every one of his names, like a great package. Nija Sarva Shaktis. It's very, very merciful. And even if one doesn't know, even if one doesn't know. I'll tell a little, since there's not a lot of questions. I had an experience when I was a very new devotee in Boston, where I joined the Boston Temple. And the program when I was a very new devotee is that almost everybody that could be spared went out on Harinam. Everybody. The temple emptied out, went on Harinam. So the place where we went on Harinam in Boston was Boston Common. It was a great, you know, the subway, there's a red line and a green line that comes out, and just down over there is Washington Street, where it's like a main shopping area, and so lunch hour, it's a sea of people, and that little space, Boston Common. So we would go there and line up and chant Hare Krishna. So, two stories. The first day I was in the temple, I was sent out on Harinam Sankirtan. And I had, you know, my dungarees with my favorite rip in the knee, and, you know, look, I was very obviously a new guy. I didn't have a dhoti and shaved head and all that stuff. I had neck beads and tilak, but I wasn't. So there was a madman that came from the shopping area every day at noon and stood there. He hated the devotees, and he hated the devotees. Oh, he was a nasty man. A little scrawny guy. It wasn't like a big Hulk or something. A little scrawny guy. And the very first day, Sadhguru Maharaj was the temple president, that there was this system where we chanted for half an hour, and then somebody would speak, and then it was time that then devotees would go out and distribute magazines. So some of the devotees would go distribute magazines and others would stay and chant, and then they would switch and chant. And so I was asked to, Sadhguru Maharaj came up and handed me a stack of magazines and a bunch of invitation cards and pointed to the crowd. I'm a new guy. I just pointed, you know, that I don't take no for an answer. So I went, and then this madman, you know, knew to pick on me because I was a new guy. So I was distributing, you know, that we had the system. We would hand people a card, invite people to the temple, and say, "Would you?" And then hand them a magazine, say, "Would you like to take this as our monthly magazine?" And some people would say different things, but that was our method. So when somebody was interested, this crazy fellow would come up and scream, "Don't take that magazine, blah, 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 blah." And he sometimes would yank it out of people's hand and throw it out of the ground and jump up and down on the magazine like he was killing the magazine. He was a madman. Yeah, he was like, you know, wound up, this guy. So I went and took shelter of Jayadvaita Swami, who was a brahmachari at the time, and said, "What do I do? What do I do? You know, I'm a new guy, and he knows it, and he's picking on me." He said, "Don't worry, just keep going, I'll take care of it." It was like, you know, Haridas Thakur telling, or Narada telling the hunter, "Don't worry about it, break your bow, and everything's okay." So I did it. I just followed what Jayadvaita Maharaj said. And so he was waiting, and I approached another person, and the guy came up and, you know, "Rah, rah, rah, don't take that magazine, these people are rah, 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 rah," and, you know, yelling and yelling, and Jayadvaita Maharaj came up with his hands like this and chanted at the top of his lungs the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And the guy looked at Jayadvaita Maharaj, put his hands on his ears, and ran down the street. And Jayadvaita Maharaj's inimitable smile. He quoted the verse, you know, the devotees derive great bliss and satisfaction, the demons flee here and there. That's one story. The other story is, by the end of the summer, because I had joined right after exams in my graduating year and went, and so it was like, you know, whatever it was, June or something, early June. And by the end of the summer, that same madman came out every day, but just from hearing the chanting of the holy name, he did a flip. He did a 180. He was still a madman. But when people would be approached to take a magazine, he'd come up and say, "Take that magazine, it's the most wonderful thing, take the magazine." Just, well, he was a madman. He wasn't friendly. I mean, he was, like you say, favorable. He was still a madman. You know, his opinion was still there somewhere, but just from hearing the chanting every day, he changed from inimical to, you know, crazy in favor. That just from hearing the chanting of the holy name, he changed. I could give some other examples. It's very powerful. It's very powerful, the chanting of the holy name. And also the association of devotees, that when the message of transcendence is spoken, it's very powerful. Even people may stand and argue and argue and argue, but the sound vibration is very powerful. Anything?
Can you please share the story of the police lady in Chicago?
You want to hear what happened? I don't know if you want to hear what happened. Where it is today is, there's a lawyer, a friend who is a lawyer in Chicago, and he's taking the matter up with the city, because she did it twice, and the third time when she came, we went across the street. She came running across the street. She saw us. It was like a banshee. Came running over and said, "You know, you guys don't have a permit to do this." And I said, "We don't need a permit to do this. It's a First Amendment expression. We're moving. We're allowed to do this." And she issued an expletive, which I'm not going to repeat. You know, "If you don't stop, I'm going to blankety blank blank blank." And I didn't, you know, I wasn't intimidated by her blankety blank blank blank. And I just said, "We're moving." And so we kept moving, and she got her superior, and superior came over and said, you know, in different tone and manner than the woman, she said, "You're going to have to stop." So I said, "Okay, we'll stop." But then a little dialogue, and about a 15-minute dialogue about, "Please tell me what is the ordinance that we're in violation of so that, you know, we can fix the problem for next time. We're stopped. I'm complying with your directive here." He said, "I don't have to tell you what ordinance you're not in compliance of." And, you know, just continued the dialogue. Said, "Well, I don't know if that's very reasonable." And I could have just, like, you know, "Can you give me your badge number and your name, officer, because I want to report this." I didn't do that. I just asked him. He said, you keep this up, and when I give you a summons, then you know what ordinance you're in violation of." You know, like, that's just intimidating. I said, "You know, we've stopped. I'm speaking about going into the future so that we can comply with your organization, your ordinances. And, you know, we've been here for 35, 40 years, and we don't need a permit to do what we're doing. I know it for a fact. You know, we had a case with the city of Chicago, and they had to pay us some money. I can show you the court case." you know, I'm not like intimidating you. I'm just letting you know. I know that we have our rights. We have our rights. So please tell me what ordinance. Well, you look under civil disobedience and disorderly conduct and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Look, you'll find it there. Which means he didn't know. Then we had some back and forth, and so finally, you know, I said, it's practically time to go, and we'll leave. But, you know, I am going to find out if there are any ordinances, and, you know, you'll probably be hearing from us. But, you know, I'm on my way. Because it had been like about two and a half hours by that time. And we had a full schedule, so we went. But we're going to get the path is we're going to get a statement from the city police, the city attorney, saying, provided X, Y, and Z, they don't need a permit. And if anybody has a problem, here's my direct phone number, you can call me. I don't think it was not a case of we were in violation of anything. It was a case of, you know, a nasty woman that ate something wrong for lunch that day or something. And the attorneys are doing this pro bono. You know, they appreciate that our rights were trampled upon, and they have some sympathy because we're not intending to go to court or anything. We just want them to have some dialogue with the city attorney. So we'll then have a letter, and we'll have the court case in hand, you know, in a plastic laminated thing, so we can say, here, take a look at this. Here's from your city attorney. Here's the federal court decision. We're moving. Is that right? I didn't, you know, ask if the lady had a little visit from Lord Nrsingadev that night in her dreams. She didn't break the drum, but she was going to blankety blank blank if we didn't stop.
I'd like to know how that turns out.
I'll let you know. Let you know. I'm very confident because I know we're within our rights. And that will help you in your place. You know, here's from the city attorney of Chicago, and, you know, it's the same place everywhere. We don't need, you know, this is within our First Amendment rights. Yes, those people need a permit because it's not First Amendment expression, it's just music. They need a permit. But it's our religious duty to do what we're doing. It's in our scriptures. We've been to court to let the courts know this is our duty. We didn't just make it up. This is a duty for us. We're just doing our religious duty. We don't have to have a permit to do our religious duty. That's our First Amendment. We have to be orderly, and we're orderly. We're complying with the police directives other than stop.
It seems we'll always meet opposition.
Sure. It happened in L.A. at the Rath Yatra. The Guru Kulis were in the park for 2 days, and the third day the police came along and said, more than 100 people need a permit. You have to leave. I said, what? You know, this is a public park. More than 100 people, you have to have a permit.
So there's probably somebody for those first 2 days who was digging through the books trying to find a reason.
No, just somebody complained and then went to the police and they came up with something. You have to have a permit. You know, for people, anyway, they'll do the same thing that we're doing. You know, they have Amarendra there in L.A. They'll just, you know, go deal with the city attorney. Mm-hmm. You know, provided they're doing X, Y, and Z, they don't need a permit. It's nice to have opposition like that. You know you're doing something.
I read a passage in Chaitanya Charitamrita some time ago where it's in the section where Lord Chaitanya has asked Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur to go door to door. And Srila Prabhupada describes in her purport how some people were inimical to them. And he says that for a devotee, it's very important that he should go door to door, or just go out and preach and be insulted by people, because otherwise he might become proud. So in order for learning humility, it's actually specifically recommended to go and be insulted.
Yeah. Or be indifferent to duality is the idea. Okay. Well, it's 9 o'clock and tomorrow's a work day. You have something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's not related to the topic.
Great.
Well, like, I know that we have, like, whatever we do, it has to be, like, a need of service.
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes, like, stay, like, in a certain area, like, people, like, have, like, a high opinion of you in that certain area field, and you're given something to do, and, like, sometimes you become intimidated because, like, what if you do something and, like, the standard that they, like, have with you, like, goes down? Like, I don't know if I'm, like, expressing it right, but, like, you want to, like, do it in a way
yeah.
that there's, like, the standard that they have with you is still
okay.
maintained. Like, you don't want to, like, mess up and then they, like, have a lower opinion of you.
Okay, well, that's the basis of service should not be what you described. The basis of service is that Krishna is pleased. That's the standard. Just like, you know, this lady out in Harinam, she wasn't pleased at all. But that's not our standard. We should conduct ourselves in such a way we're beyond or outside of criticism. But if she's going to criticize, even we're out, you know, within the bounds of what's to be done. That's her difficulty. Our business is to please Krishna. So if you focus upon, this is that anchor example, the ship is in the harbor and the storm comes. If you're anchored, the storm will pass. You know, if this one, the basis of your activity is that Krishna should be pleased. That's the anchor. Then you're well situated. It doesn't mean I don't care about this person, that person, you know, heck with them. But that's not, we're sensitive to individuals, but our standard is that Krishna should be pleased. And while we're doing that, in the mode of goodness, we're concerned about doing things that, as far as possible, others can be pleased. But you can't please everybody. But we want to please Krishna. That's the focus. And then there's standards for what is pleasing to Krishna. And if it's a standard, let's say you're asked to prepare prasadam for Harinam. So you get a nice cookie recipe and they burn. They won't have as many cookies. You figured out that some of the other batches didn't burn, so they're okay. But then from that experience you learn. Have to be attentive, how many minutes, and so on and so on. So what you want is that Krishna is pleased as far as possible. And if someone sees you, if a sincere devotee sees you doing like that, even if the outcome is some of the cookies got burned, they'll be very pleased with that effort that you just made. Could you move like that way? Thank you. That you got the idea? Yeah. Okay. Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki?
Jai.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Maharaj.
Jai.